Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9940. Think it's too big, too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
And away we go on this Wednesday, May the 27th, 2020, 527 2020, 20 minutes past the hour. And this morning here on WWGH Radio, we are going to continue all morning to pay tribute to the one and only broadcasting icon here in Marion, Charlie Evers, who passed away Sunday night at the age of 85. And this morning, we are going to have a tremendous amount of fun. We've got another broadcasting legend here in Marion in the studio, Jeff Ruth. We've got the 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow. We've got David Newell, who was Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, calling in. We've got Glenn Coble coming in this morning. We have got Brenda Donegan, who writes the Just Musing column for the Marion Star, calling in this morning. And Dennis Garrigan as well, who worked with Charlie, will be calling in over the course of the next 4 hours. So stay tuned, because the next 4 hours are going to be remembering personal and public memories of the one and only Charlie Evers. But before we get to that, we've got to do something, because we are in the middle of coronavirus. And nobody's happy about that, I think, at this point. But to get some answers is a lady who's been on with us at least once a week since this all started, and we cannot thank her enough for that. She is the Marion Public Health Commissioner, Tracy Kinsler. Tracy, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Tracy, it was a big week last week. The restaurants opened up, and Memorial Day weekend. Seemed like a lot of people were out. It warmed up for the first time. What did you make of the traffic and the precautions that the restaurants took? Did everything come out okay?
We didn't really get much complaints about our local restaurants. I think that, you know, they were trying very hard to comply and do what they needed to do. And so, you know, we hope for the best there. I'm certainly, you know, worried about what the next 2 weeks will bring. You know, will we see a spike after, you know, the weekend and all of that? So we're going to kind of keep an eye on it, keep being vigilant and watching things and see what direction it goes.
You know, Tracy, we do an obituary report 4 times a day, and we've been reading it in the newspaper, the obituary column. That's a big question for a lot of people. With the rules changing, what currently are the rules when it comes to a memorial or a funeral? What can be done? Is it back to normal? Do you have to stand 6 feet apart? How does all that work?
Yeah, you should try to limit the people that come to the service. You certainly don't want to cause an outbreak and cause another death by having people at a service. Have people wear masks and try to stay that 6 feet apart. I don't think that the 10-person rule applies anymore, but I certainly wouldn't have any more people in there than the funeral home can sustain having the 6 feet distance. And the funeral home will walk you through all of that. They have plans laid out for how they're going to do things and how many people they'll accept and all of that kind of stuff.
Tracy, the mayor was on yesterday, and they're still crunching the numbers for the Aquatic Center, because as it would have been, the Aquatic Center would have opened this past Monday, Memorial Day. He said he's looking at the numbers, the money that they're going to have to spend to bring in more staff to do the cleaning, and I believe it's something like 120-something people are all they'd be able to have in there at one point. Do you think it's feasible at this point to open up the Aquatic Center?
You know, that's a tough one, because I know that people really, you know, want to go there, and it's a place for kids to get away during the summer and all of that. But it's going to be very hard to open any swimming pool. And I think the Aquatic Center is even harder because of all of the equipment that they have and the amount of staff that they would need to run it safely. And I don't think they have the ability to just shut down part of it. I think the water is all connected. So it's not even like they could just open, you know, one piece of it and let the other go. They have to, you know, have all the equipment running for everything. So I think it would be very hard to have it open this summer and follow by the rules, which, you know, is very sad.
Also spoke to the mayor yesterday about the Popcorn Festival. They did have a meeting last week. The final decision has not been made. Of course, the Popcorn Festival will take place the first weekend after Labor Day. Have you given a recommendation to the mayor or to the Popcorn Festival committee about what should happen in September?
They have not asked us for a recommendation at the health department. Certainly, we would offer any advice that we could if they came to us. It's hard when it's so far away. With this pandemic, it's changing all the time, and September is just sort of a lifetime in terms of this pandemic. So it's hard to guess what the world is going to be like in September. But that type of a large gathering is very scary. That's a lot of people with absolutely no way to social distance, to monitor people, to see if they're symptomatic, any of that kind of stuff. That would be tremendously difficult. And I feel like that amount of people, you know, could definitely lead to an outbreak.
You know, Tracy, obviously you are watching the health side of everything, but opening up the restaurants and certainly things like the Popcorn Festival and even the pools to a certain degree, I would have to believe at this point are more economical decisions based upon the fact that we do not have any cure for this. We do not have any vaccine. Is it hard for you as a health professional to watch these things open back up, knowing that the decision is probably economic? And correct me if I'm wrong, if it's not economic, let me know if there's another reasoning for it.
No, I think you're right. I think it's an economic reason. I think people need to be employed, and people need to have a place to go and live life and do things. And you can't expect people to hide from a virus forever. So all of that stuff makes sense in my head. You know, my brain says, yes, all that makes sense. But, you know, like you said, being from public health, our mission is to prevent unnecessary deaths and suffering, and you know, we feel very strongly that, you know, this will cause more spikes and hot spots and outbreaks. And you know, it's really hard to be able to see that a train is coming and not be able to do anything to stop it. But I think that's the case when you have a pandemic, you know, any kind of disaster situation. The difference between sort of a hurricane or tornado and a pandemic is that the hurricane or tornado happens really fast and then you move on to recovery, whereas this pandemic is a disaster that just drags on and on and on. So, you know, it is really hard, and I have a, you know, sort of a pit in my stomach about what's going to happen this summer as we've got stuff reopened and, you know, how it's going to impact people. And you know, but I get that there's not a lot we can do. You know, we have to let things open.
You know, Tracy, one of the things that has not reopened and caused a lot of interest with a lot of people is the public library. Do you know, is that going to reopen? Have you heard anything in regard to places like that?
I haven't heard anything yet, but I'm certain that they're working on that. They have put together teams at the state to try to figure, you know, all of this stuff out. And so one of the things you have to figure out with the library, where everybody's sort of touching the same books and stuff like that, is how do you disinfect? How do you sanitize, you know, a book that everybody's touching? And so they have a lot to figure out there. I don't think, you know, the spacing and the general cleaning is the problem. It's the, you know, that you have a sort of a revolving door of materials that you have to figure out. What is the risk? How high is the risk, and what can we do, you know, to minimize that risk? So I would expect guidance to be out pretty soon, maybe within the next week or so about that.
Tracy, there has been, because one of the things we want to do with this program when we have you on is clear up any rumors. And a big rumor right now, we all know what is going on at the prison, that there was an outbreak. It put Marion far ahead number-wise. With cases of coronavirus, COVID-19, there have been rumors that things are not being reported from the jail, that numbers are not being reported, inmates are dying. What is the truth of what's going on at the jail and at the prison and with that whole situation right now?
Well, I actually just had a meeting yesterday where there was a person from the jail there, and they do not currently have any cases at the jail. They have plans for if they get somebody, you know, how they would sort of isolate them and work through that process. And they have us on speed dial, you know, if they do get anybody, or even if they have questions as they're receiving somebody and they want to make sure, have they tested positive or not, they can call and ask, and, you know, we'll look it up so that we can sort of head something off at the pass. So I feel pretty comfortable in what the jail is doing right now. In terms of the prisons, Marion Correctional Institute and North Central Correctional Institute, we're seeing a decrease, a significant decrease in new cases from Marion Correctional Institute, and really the only cases we've been seeing lately from there is if they happen to receive a new person and they're testing them before they come in. We've gotten a couple of positives that way. North Central is, you know, it's kind of a slow burn there of, you know, getting new cases one or two at a time. But I do feel like we're getting the accurate information. We're getting the test results back when they have positives. And we're reporting that out as soon as we get it. So I know that it can look weird to people because, you know, our numbers don't always match what the state has, but sometimes they have, you know, when a lab puts a result in, they've got the wrong county, the wrong address, and it gets lost in space there for a few days as counties trying to figure out who it actually belongs to. But I do feel comfortable that they're reporting accurate numbers. And it's just a huge hot spot, and it makes it very hard to navigate, especially in a time frame that a lot of people would like to see. Sometimes it takes a little longer than people, you know, expect.
Tracy, final question. You said as we head into the summer with businesses reopening that you have a feeling in the pit of your stomach. What is the summer of 2020 going to look like? What is causing that worry in the pit of your stomach?
Well, I think we're just going to continue to see cases, as you know, and even if we don't have a high number of deaths, the people who get sick from this, it's very scary, and it weighs on me at night that, you know, somebody's family is going to go through this. It's, you know, it can be life-altering. We're seeing people who have seizures, they have memory loss, changes in their brain function, they have scars on their lungs. And so just because, you know, we're reporting a relatively low number of deaths doesn't mean that there's not a lot of suffering that goes along with this. And so it just keeps me up at night thinking about people and their family, you know, and I don't want to see them go through this. When a family member gets hospitalized and you can't be there with them, that's really scary. It's scary for the person who's hospitalized, and it's scary for the family member who can't go into the hospital. And I just don't wish that on anybody. And if we can prevent it, that's what I want to do.
And Tracy, very quickly, I want to talk about nursing homes very quickly. There was a outbreak at Heartland. How are the other nursing homes doing? Is something being done for our elderly population or just people who are in nursing homes who are not all necessarily elderly? How's that going in Marion at this point? And are we going to be able to visit our loved ones anytime soon?
That I wish I knew the answer to. I'm not sure. And when you look at someplace like Heartland where the outbreak is, you know, it got in there and it's just spreading like wildfire. Right now they're up to 47 cases. And 8 deaths. So that has gone through there really quick, and we're seeing that high number of deaths, and it's really scary. And so, you know, they need our support. They haven't done anything wrong. It's just once it gets in there, because they live together, it's going to go through, you know, really fast. And so I hope everybody's kind of sending thoughts and prayers out to our nursing homes and offering them that support and thinking about them when you're interacting, because we're all tied together. So what we do impacts the staff at the nursing homes, who then bring it into the nursing home to the patients. So we're working with Heartland and we're working with our other nursing homes to try to, you know, help them figure out, you know, better ways to know right away when they have a case. And we're working with the Ohio Department of Health to get testing done on a regular basis, so we can, you know, in the other nursing homes, not have an outbreak like what we're seeing at Heartland. But it's very scary, and it's heartbreaking, you know, what they're going through over there.
Tracy, I cannot thank you enough for calling in each and every week, and we will talk to you again next Tuesday. Stay well.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye. Tracy Kinsler, Marion Public Health Commissioner, and all very important information. But now we turn to the passing of our friend Charlie Evers. A legendary broadcaster, was at this station for 6 years. I worked with Charlie for 15 in total at 4 different stations. I think I just followed Charlie wherever he went. If he went to a new station, I went to a new station. We had a fun yesterday remembering Charlie, but today we've got a lot of people who are going to call in and be in studio who are going to share their memories and the importance of Charlie in this community. And I do want to mention, again, what is so great about this, and it's hard to say that when somebody passes, what is great about it, but yesterday, the Marion Star, every store I walked in, above the fold, top story, color picture, the passing of a radio icon, Charlie Evers, the Columbus Dispatch, B4 of the Metro section, huge picture of Charlie, story about his passing. And yesterday, after we went off the air, the Associated Press, and by the way, if you don't know what the Associated Press, if you're not in the news business, is, this is the mother of all media outlets. This is the media outlet that sends stories all over the country to newspapers, radio stations, television stations, internet companies. Charlie Evers was in the AP yesterday, commemorating his death. And I don't believe in death that that has ever happened in Marion before. Maybe President Harding, if they had the Associated Press back then. But other than that, I don't think there's ever been anybody but Charlie Evers. So we were very happy to see that. And the two people who are going to start us off this morning are two people who knew Charlie very well for a whole lot of years. They were both here for his 85th birthday party back in September, and they are both good friends of mine. Legendary broadcaster here in Marion, Jeff Ruth, who worked with Charlie at WMRN and stayed in touch with him all those years after, so has probably known Charlie for close to 40 years. And same can be said for the 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, who has done interviews with Charlie, and recently, since she moved back in the last decade, has done many things with us with Charlie. So it's always fun to have these two in and remember the legendary Charlie Evers. Mary Ellen, Jeff, thank you so much for coming in this morning.
We'll be able to hear this on reruns probably for a long time.
Forever. Jeff, I'm going to, when you interview Tracy Kinsler this afternoon, I'm going to come cough during your interview.
Was the mic on?
No, the mic wasn't on, okay. But my mic was on. Oh. I think we heard it over here.
Okay, I'm sorry. That's like the first sneeze I've had in a week. So everybody's saying, uh-oh, is he getting it?
It's coronavirus here in the studio. Mary Ellen, how are things with you? A lot of people worry, Jeff and Charlie as well. Once you get over 50 years of age, we worry at this point because of coronavirus. You're fine.
I'm fine.
You're fine.
Yeah. As far as I know.
you look great.
Yeah.
As opposed to me, who doesn't look so great. Well,
I don't know. After that sneeze, I'm worried this morning. I don't know where we're going. Do want to remind people, Mary Ellen and Jeff will be staying with us this morning, and we've got friends, and that's what it is this morning. Dennis Garrigan, next hour, calling in for a few minutes. Brenda Donegan in the 10 o'clock hour. Glenn Coble will be in from 10 to 12 today. And then Mr. McFeely, David New, will be calling in the 11 o'clock hour. So a lot of fun this morning. But Mary Ellen? You were actually at my house when you heard of Charlie's passing.
Yes, and I was so surprised because I thought he'd be there.
He would have under.
Yeah, right, yeah.
When you hear the news of something like that, somebody like Charlie, who was so vital and so active, what's it make you think about?
Well, it makes you think, gee, I'm sorry about that because I really liked that guy, you know? And I don't know, it's hard to hear about people that are passing anymore because it seems like there's so many that I know, you know. And Charlie was somebody that I don't know. I think I knew him more than 40 years.
Well,
more like about 60.
Well, for somebody, and you have a unique perspective that Jeff and I would not even have, running for office starting in 1969, Elgin School Board, Charlie, oddly enough, it's weird how things are, started his on-air career in 68. So he had just started when you had started. But you also ran for the License Bureau, or were given the License Bureau.
I had to run for that.
Did you have to run for that?
Well, quietly I ran.
Quietly. It was a private thing.
Yes, right.
But then County Treasurer, and then, of course, State Treasurer. What was your interaction with Charlie? Because radio was an important medium in those days when you were running for office.
It was very important because radio made a big difference, you know, and you tried to get on radio as much as you could. So I can't remember when I first met Charlie because it seems like I've known him a long, long time. And he was such a friendly guy and such a good guy that it seemed like everybody liked Charlie. And the interviews, I always enjoyed being interviewed by him. And it was just a joy to know Charlie.
Jeff, you came to Marion and the radio station 1979. At that point, Charlie was the top dog in Marion, no question about it. What was it like to learn about him, and what was your first meeting with him like?
Well, I think I mentioned that maybe the last time I was in here, because I started working evenings from like 7 to midnight, and he would come in, you know, basically, he didn't start till like 5 in the morning, but he'd come in like at 3:30 or 3:45, he'd pour his cup of coffee. He smoked a corncob pipe, and he'd sit there for an hour, and I'm thinking, I'd be home in bed for another hour, but he just came in, and, you know, he'd check the paper, and the AP, check the wire, and just kind of sit there and kind of get comfortable. And about the third week, I was there, third or fourth week, the overnight person was on vacation, so I had to fill in, and wasn't a whole lot going on, you know, on the overnight shift. And he came in and, you know, had the overalls and the, I don't remember if he had a straw hat, but he might have had a straw hat. And it was like, you know, the guy said, well, this has got to be Charlie. And, you know, he just sat there and, you know, for an hour or so and basically kind of heard a little bit about his life. And it's like, okay, this is Charlie, and I can see why people would listen because he knew something about everything. Well, he didn't know anything about sports.
But he wouldn't have been on the sports report. No.
But he knew something about everything else other than sports.
Well, and this now is 41 years ago, 1979. For people who were not alive then, and there are quite a few of those who are listening now, explain to people what radio was in 1979, and how big a deal he was in Marion.
Well, especially in the morning show. I mean, you didn't have local television. At that time, if you were watching Columbus TV, I mean, they weren't scrolling at the bottom. They didn't do a lot of local news. And if you wanted to know what was going on, it was the Marion Star and WMRN. Those really were your two sources. And, of course, MRN, early in the morning, you know, you want to get a jump on the newspaper. And so the news department, I know, worked extremely hard to get the local stories out first thing in the morning. And Charlie kind of just, if there was anything going on in Marion that you needed to know about, Charlie knew about it. And if he didn't, somebody would call in and say, you know, did you know about this? Did you know about that? And again, he kind of had his finger on everything in the community.
You talked about after Charlie left MRN in the early 1980s that there were a lot of morning people who really didn't work out.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many people that they had. I remember they brought one guy in. He came in from Boston. And I don't know if he came from, or if maybe he had been working in Ohio or something, but he had this kind of this Boston mentality. You know, here he is, you know, I'm from Boston. What am I doing in Marion? And it just, it just didn't work. And if you're in a community the size of Marion, you got to get out in the community. You got to do things. You need to join the Chamber of Commerce or the Rotary or the Kiwanis or the Lions Club, and you need to be at these events. And Charlie was at all of those kind of events, and you needed to kind of embrace that community. And we had a lot of people that came to Marion that were working in Marion but weren't from Marion, and they never kind of embraced that. I came here, you know, I didn't grow up in Marion, but you know, was from Ohio, so I knew a little bit about what Marion was like. But he embraced all of that, and you needed to do that.
You know, somebody called Charlie yesterday on the internet Mr. Marion, and that certainly is true in my opinion. But
and that was before the internet.
But for people who don't know, you know, Charlie was born in Bucyrus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, this was not his hometown, and he loved Bucyrus till the day he left us. Mary Ellen, you talked about it there. He had a likability. Jack Benny once said of broadcasting, he said, if they like you, if the audience likes you, that's the best thing that can happen. If they don't, there's nothing you can do about it.
And he could laugh about himself.
Well, I want to get to the humor in a second, but the audience liked Charlie. Whether he went to these Rotary events or not, when the radio was on, the audience liked Charlie. What do you think that was?
Well, it was the way he was on the air. He was so, I don't know, just so interesting. If he didn't know something, he'd try to find out about it. He didn't try to put on any airs about something. And, you know, I would hear him at Primrose, probably the most recent experiences with Charlie, other than here at the radio station. And he would come in with a subject every month, and it would start off, and it would just go. And it was so interesting to listen to him, because he could just wind a tail like you couldn't believe.
And never had a note.
No notes.
No notes. And that's one of the most amazing things. And, you know, Jeff, being in broadcasting, I've worked with you. You carried in a ton of notes in the morning. I bring in things because we got to have something to talk about over the course. Charlie came in with a book. He carried a book bag in later years. I don't know what he did early on, but in later years, he carried a book bag. But all he would pull out of that was a water bottle, and he would pull out, we'll get to this in just a second. Caller, hold the line. He would pull out a water bottle, and he would pull out a notebook of trivia questions, because he did a lot of trivia. But as far as the subjects on his show or what he was going to talk about, that just spilled out of him.
and I don't mean this as a negative. He was not a polished broadcaster. I mean, he didn't go to journalism school and, you know, have a four-year degree. And he never talked down to the listeners. He always kind of talked at their level. And, you know, and again, that goes back to being relatable and being just, you know, one of the guys.
Absolutely. We're going to come back here in just a second. This is one of Charlie's longtime friends, Terry Klein. Terry, how you doing this morning?
Well, okay.
Good.
I was a little hesitant to tune in, didn't know what to expect. And Charlie's son-in-law, Tim, had been listening to reruns. So Charlie will go on and probably surpass I Love Lucy.
I would say that's true.
You know, it's what you'd said with Jeff and Charlie at the last fly-in. The fly-in before that, Charlie was the speaker, was the MC, if you will. I had a chart of things for like every 15, 20 minutes. Here's something you might want to say, etc., and a whole list. And it's just like you said, Jeff needs framework to work in. And that big mistake I made, but...
Oh, don't give Charlie framework. That's a mistake.
No. They were just tooling around, having a good time. And that, you know, that's one of the things. I don't think anybody that ever met Charlie had ever left the conversation without feeling better, laughing about something. And, you know, he was a heck of a good friend. When we opened up the community garden the first year, I had some things I had to do, and as first events usually are, they're kind of strenuous, and I wasn't able to be there for most of the day. I came back late in the afternoon. I couldn't believe it. Charlie had stayed in that parking lot the whole day, the whole afternoon. And I asked him, what are you doing here, Charlie? Why didn't you go home? Well, somebody might show up and not know where their plot is, the garden, and I thought I'd just stay here to help them.
That's Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Terry, I know he thought an awful lot of you. I know you thought an awful lot of him, and I'm so glad you called in to share that memory.
Well, the good times.
That's right.
Charlie, this city should bestow upon him the title of Commander of Fun.
Yeah, he did. He gave us a lot of fun for sure.
Yep.
Thank you, Terry.
Okay. Talk to you later. Bye-bye. Bye.
You know, Cincinnati.
Let me get your mic back on here.
Like, Cincinnati has a Pete Rose Way. I'd like to see Marion do something like, Charlie Evers Boulevard or Charlie Evers Avenue, something like that.
Well, it really should happen because we've been having the conversation here, and it's been funny, about the icons of Marion, and we've had a lot of fun with that. But truly, that's Charlie. Because what made him that? Because how many broadcasters have been through here in the last 80 years of broadcasting, but very few you remember, and Charlie is at the top of that list.
Yeah. Again, the fact that he could kind of laugh at himself, the relatability. As Terry mentioned, you know, he would go out, and I mentioned the last time I was in here, the Marion County Fair. I mean, he would come into the station 4:30 in the morning, the week of the Marion County Fair. He got off the air at 7:00. He was at the fair at 7:30 at the tent, and he would interview people till 11 o'clock, 10:30, 11:30 that night, and then, you know, Monday night, Tuesday morning, he'd be back in the studio. He'd do his show till 7 o'clock, left at 7, out to the Marion County Fair, would be there till 11 o'clock that night. Same thing, did it every day of the week.
Want to talk about, you cannot talk about Charlie and not talk about his humor, because he had that a lot. Mary Ellen attended our Christmas party last year, and I'm just going to convey this story as best I remember it, because I was here, and Charlie would do things like this, because we consider Mary Ellen part of the family here now. And Charlie last year, I don't know what it was, got on this kick about women being in the kitchen and doing, and I don't know if he was being serious or not, but I don't think he was. But do you remember this, Mary Ellen?
Well, I do remember talking about Hillary's hair.
Hillary Clinton's hair. That became a thing with him.
Yeah, right.
I don't know what it was about her hair that got Charlie riled up.
Well, he really would come to that every time you'd mention Hillary. It was her hair, yeah.
What became part of his theme song.
Uh-huh,
the right. Guy who wrote his theme song put that in.
Uh-huh.
But he just had, what other broadcaster would talk about somebody's hairdo? He would do it.
Yeah, well, that's right. He had such a knack of saying how he felt and getting away with it, really, because, you know, everybody liked him, and it didn't matter when he brought up a subject that was a really sort of a situation that you probably wouldn't talk about. I mean, I probably wouldn't talk about Hillary's hair, but he did, and it was funny, you know.
Well, and he did things like terminal wrinkles. You know, he made that quote, and it was very, very funny, and he loved doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
Charlie loved talking about the idiosyncrasies of people.
Yeah.
Because everything interested him.
Uh-huh.
Now, I want to talk about that, because I felt that was his best trait, was he had endless curiosity about everything.
Uh-huh.
Where do you think that came from?
It's Mariana? Just his nature.
Yeah.
He just wanted to know. Yeah. It was, that's what was so interesting about him.
If there was a question, mm-hmm. He wanted to know the answer.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
Jeff, you saw that curiosity on hand many times. What do you think it was about him? He was curious about everything.
Yeah, and even in later years, you know, when he got his smartphone, you know, a lot of people in their 70s, again, you know, he lived to 85, but a lot of people in their 70s and 80s, last thing they want to do is try to figure out the smartphone or go to the internet or anything like that. And he was completely the opposite. I mean, he embraced it, and the more difficult a question was, the more he dug to try and get the answer.
Well, and I think it's still there, but there is a tree, I think, over on Cummins Avenue by the library that is kind of getting entangled in the power lines. And he would drive over. That wasn't on his way home. He lived out in Clarendon. He would drive over by that tree to see how it was doing after a storm or just to see how close it was to the power lines. And he would report on this tree and how close it got to the power lines just because he was curious. That was him. Have you ever done anything like that, Jeff?
No.
I want to talk about something that we've all heard. His voice. Now, it's hard to describe somebody's voice, but I've never heard anything quite like his voice. You would not mistake him for anybody else on air, would you?
I guess I never really thought about that.
He had a unique voice.
Mm-hmm.
They always say radio voice. I guess it was, but it was just a unique voice. He. So many people sound alike when they get on. You know this last week, Glenn. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
People mistook you for Glenn Goble when you were on the air. You wouldn't mistake Charlie for somebody else.
No, definitely not.
You heard that voice, Mary Ellen.
Oh, yeah.
He had a
yeah.
unique
oh, he
timbre
did.
To his
yeah.
voice.
Yeah. Well, I've been very sensitive to voices on the air, and it seems like I can recognize most people when I hear them, if I've heard them several times before. But he had a good voice on the air. That's important.
And yeah. he also was very aware of what it took to interest people. He didn't do all news. He didn't do sports. Mm-hmm. He tried to talk about interesting things, and he was the keeper for Marion history. He loved not being born in Marion. He loved Marion history.
Yes, and really got into it, and then I liked to hear about the Bucyrus history, too, because he'd talk about the Bratwurst Festival when it was going on, and he really paid attention to Bucyrus.
I remember one thing, and since he was in the River Valley District, and I don't remember the years with the cancer scare at River Valley or whatever, but I know that's one thing that he was very serious about that.
And didn't like it.
And I know that he talked about that a lot, and he wanted answers.
Well, he did not like a lot of because it's weird you mentioned that, because I think in the last year we talked about that one morning, about that time period, and he did not like how, and being a media person, I don't think he liked how the media handled that. I don't think... That's one of the few things I ever heard Charlie say that he did not like. That whole River Valley cancer scare thing.
I mean, that was, what, 30 years ago?
30 years ago.
And I still remember, you know, 30 years ago, how much he talked about that. You know?
Yeah. But, and that's one of the interesting things. You would not say Charlie was a newsman, but he certainly delivered a lot of news to people.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it, yeah.
Yeah, he did it in his own way. It wasn't a news report, but hey, guess what I saw last night?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, Mary Ellen, one of the tricks to radio, which is a lot different than television, I think, is that you're talking to one person.
Yes.
You know, you're not talking to masses. If masses are listening, that's good, but you're talking to one person. And he could do that very well.
Oh, yes. Yes, he could. And I'm trying to remember... the interviews, but it's all kind of foggy at this point. But his interviews, he was good at interviewing.
He was a good
mm-hmm.
interviewer.
Yeah.
And he certainly didn't write questions.
No, not at all. And he would really get you to bring out things that were of interest and could do it in such a good way.
You know, I know we're getting close on time, but I mentioned the Beavis and Butthead story.
Well, he would appreciate that. Tell the story. Tell people who Beavis and... Well, I'm going to hold... Because we had a long news report, so I'm going to hold over about 3 minutes.
Okay.
But Charlie would appreciate, and he's heard it.
He came back to the station, and he laughed about it.
Well, tell people who they are.
And a lot of people would not have laughed at it. They were a couple of animated young boys that had their own TV show, and that they eventually, I think, made a movie or two about Beavis and Butthead. And, I mean, again, these were animated, and they would always kind of cross the line a little bit or whatever. And Charlie interviewed Marion County Fair, and I still remember, you know, he introduced these two students at River Valley. And, you know, they were talking about their goat project or whatever the project was. And he said, we have two, you know, young men from River Valley, and, you know, what's your name? Anyway, and they had distinctive glasses. And he, Beavis. Oh, well, Beavis, well, tell us about your project. And back at the station, we're dying because we knew Charlie didn't know who Beavis and Butthead were. So he gets done talking to Beavis, and then he said, "And you know, also joining us, what's your name?" And like, Butthead. Oh, well, that's an unusual name. So he does the interview, very straightforward or whatever, gets done. I want to thank Beavis and Butthead from River Valley for joining me in the interview. And at the station, everybody knew who Beavis and Butthead were, but Charlie didn't. Yeah. And when he came back to the station, of course, we were all laughing, and some people would have gotten very defensive about it or whatever, and it was like, oh, I can't believe I did that or whatever. And he laughed along with everybody else. And again, basically, we were, you know, a lot of times you laugh with people. At that time, we were kind of laughing at him. And a lot of people would have gotten very defensive about that, but not Charlie. It was like, oh, how stupid was I? I can't believe I did that. But that was Charlie.
And that's the essence of the man. And I'll tell you what, we're going to talk more about Charlie Evers all morning this morning. Mary Ellen Withrow, Jeff Ruth will stick along with us here. Dennis Garrigan coming up, David Newell, Brenda Donegan, Glenn Coble, and who knows who else. Stay tuned. Paying tribute to the one and only broadcasting icon here in Marion, who passed away Sunday night at age 85, Charlie Evers, back in 10 minutes.
I'd be here on this planet for a limited amount of time unless you can really enjoy. So we've got to focus on the things that are real and worthwhile. But I would say I should have spent more time with my family, although now my son Mark is a documentary film producer in California. My daughter Carrie was on a show with me back in the early, about 10, but she has children, but, oh, I think...